You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and Katie Gopidoff in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or you can simply ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. And today, I have a very special guest. Matthew Collar is coming on the show. He's going to talk about his new gig at Purple Insider, and I wanted to fight, so I picked a little bit of a debate with him, and I really, really enjoyed that. Really glad to have him on. Hope I can get him on again, because there's other stuff I want to fight him about. All in good fun, though. The real reason was because all of his content is now on his own independent thing, Purple Insider, because of some of the reorganizations and COVID-19 related stuff that's going on at ESPN. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew where you could find all of that stuff. I also have a pretty fun story for you that I'm going to tell later in the show, but first I actually want to talk a little bit about some current events. We haven't caught up on the latest goings-on in the world of COVID-19 and how that's affecting sports, as well as an interview with the NFL's chief medical officer that I think is worth kind of talking about here. So we're going to talk about that real quick. We'll get into some story time and we'll wrap up the show with the interview with Matthew Collar. So on Tuesday, Alan Sills, the chief medical officer for the NFL, did like a big 2-hour news conference with reporters, and some of the key takeaways for that are as follows. And I have an ESPN and a CBS article that I'll link to you guys in the show notes so that you can read up on any of the stuff that I don't get to here. But I think the most interesting things are that a lot of the executives expect that they'll be able to do some like diminished crowd stuff. And essentially, you know, instead of 60,000 people, you have 10,000 people instead of all 6 seats apart. And ostensibly, you can, you know, kind of maintain social distancing, make everybody wear a mask, and you can still have some fans in the stands. And a lot of executives think that that's going to happen. However, on the flip side of that, you know, you can't exactly limit their interactions when it's halftime and everybody gets up to go to the bathroom or concession lines and the concourses and stuff. Really difficult to kind of maintain social distancing through that. And I think they'll probably try to find a way to, like, limit interactions as much as possible. But at least for my money, there's never going to be a way to do it safely. So if they want to sell tickets to these games, they have to be okay with an implicit level of unavoidable risk. But that's just my opinion on the thing. I just don't really see a way that you can keep everybody 6 feet apart at all times in a football stadium scenario, unless you only want there to be like one person a section or something like that. There's also a lot of muttering from all of these teams that they're all kind of glad that the MLB and NBA kind of are under more pressure to come up with a plan, and then the NFL will be able to basically just copy off of that plan, which I think is a good strategy since they, you know, they kind of have to go first so you can see what they do and what works and what doesn't. And, you know, so we can kind of look to the MLB and the NBA, which have some plans to like open up and here's how we're going to do stuff. I know the MLB thought, or NBA is in talks to, I think there was like somebody with an inside source at Disney World that said they were going to play a whole bunch of games at Disney World, which I guess kind of makes sense. Like that is a big, like Disney World's an entire city. So I guess like you would have a lot of places where you could put a basketball court and you could maybe facilitate like a large scale basketball event there. I think a big one is that social distancing in terms of the actual players on the field is going to be impossible. And I think everybody who's reasonable has already kind of figured that out and agreed to that. And so players are going to be at a pretty significant risk of getting coronavirus. And the real crux of that conversation was, okay, what do you do when there's a positive test and the way that they respond to it and all that stuff? You know, they can't say anything until they have a definitive plan. But that's kind of like where the discussion is right now, is in trying to answer that question and figure that out. But I think there's also kind of a labor issue there, and with the NFLPA is going to be very involved, and I think that might be like one of the bigger sources of tension, because, you know, you could very easily say, you know, there's like 2,500 players in the league. If one or two of them get coronavirus, we can sit them down. We can, you know, testing after every game. We can make sure if somebody gets coronavirus, they can, you know, but that puts the players at higher risk. And so the labor union, who is the NFLPA, which is like their whole job is to prevent that risk and to look out for the interest of their players, that's going to be like a point of contention where you say, no, don't make my players play if they're going to be at higher risk, even if that risk is, oh, you know, out of 2,500, only maybe 50 will get it. That kind of attitude is, I think, easier for like an owner or, you know, an NFL front office person versus somebody who whose entire purpose is to protect the interest of those 50 players, as well as all the other ones that don't get sick. I think you could do some easy measures. You know, you could put like visors on face masks and stuff. You could try to, you know, institute a lot of testing, I would imagine. You know, of course, when Rudy Gobert got it for the Utah Jazz and tested positive, and there was that whole thing that kind of kicked off the whole shutting down of sports, they had tests in that locker room that night. So I imagine that you can get a hold of enough coronavirus tests, especially come, you know, July, August, and hopefully things will have at least mobilized a little more. And, you know, it's difficult to say entirely with the way that, that politics works in the United States, but you would hope that there would be enough access for some apparatus like the NFL that's willing to pay a whole bunch. You would think that if they're willing to pay a lot, they'll be able to get them. Now, whether or not that's right or wrong, that's a discussion for a different kind of podcast. But suffice it to say that the NFL should be able to facilitate a lot of coronavirus testing if the return to football is predicated on that. I wouldn't expect that to be a hang-up for them. I think they can just, like, pay out the nose for it. They certainly have the funds. There's also, of course, a revenue issue. I think the league is going to be highly, and the NFLPA are both going to be highly motivated to put a season on some way or another. They'll have to figure out a few issues among themselves, like the testing thing. They'll have to figure out what's going to happen to the 2021 salary cap because of the revenue decline. Of course, the salary cap is based on league revenue, and league revenue has been going up every year for forever, and that's why the salary cap goes up every year. But of course, the league revenue is going to take a huge, huge hit, and the salary cap could decrease a ton, and it would screw up all of the cap calculations and screw up every team, not just the Vikings who are really up against it, screw up everybody if you really like had that proportional change happen. And that's bad for the players, which means the NFLPA is going to be against it because suddenly all these players are going to have to lose contracts and get cut and nobody's going to be able to get a deal. NFLPA doesn't want that. And of course, the NFL isn't going to want to lose all that revenue either. So I think that they will be pretty motivated to figure out something there. And I don't expect that. And this is just my opinion. I don't expect that to be too much of a hangup. So I think that just about covers, I don't know, read the articles that I link there. There's probably a lot more in there that I forgot to mention here. But for now, I'm going to move on to the story of the day. But real quick, before I do that, I want to talk to you really quickly about Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar. It can be eaten after a workout, first thing in the morning, or as a guilt-free late-night snack. It is very low in sugar, very high in protein. It's pretty good for you as far as like a protein bar kind of thing is concerned. And for me, I don't like those things to be like too sweet. I'm not a big like high punchy in the face sugar in the morning or after a workout or anything like that. So I really appreciate it. And they're still really, really flavorful. It's very chocolatey and plus whatever the flavor you think you want. They have all kinds of options. There's a mint chocolate one. There's a chocolate raspberry, double chocolate fudge brownie, peanut butter brownie, that all that kind of stuff. And so really whatever your speed is, there is an option. So go to builtbar.com and enter promo code locked on. When you check out, you get $10 off your first order. That's builtbar.com, promo code locked on. When a young player gets in trouble, especially in high school or college, if it's a one-off thing, you'll typically hear the same narrative for just about everybody. And it's like, oh, that's not who he is. And you hear that. That's just not him. There was an out-of-character moment, and he'll apologize, and he'll do everything right. And kind of 50-50 whether or not that bears out right. Sometimes they get in trouble again, or sometimes it is who that is, and it was just a PR thing. And sometimes it genuinely is just like a kid who had a bad night. And I think when you hear, oh, that's not who he is, that's uncharacteristic of him, I think that's the way it's put a lot, I think it's easy to get jaded by that and just kind of say like, oh, that's what they all say. Even if what they all say is true half of the time, you can kind of find yourself defaulting to assuming that it's untrue just because you hear it a lot. And the people who have something to gain are going to come up with that as a lie. And the people who it's really true are going to say the same thing. It's difficult to believe. And so a lot of times you default to skepticism. But in some cases, it really is uncharacteristic of that person. And the more research you do, the more you look into a situation, the more you find the exact opposite. I think Dalvin Cook's a great example of that. He, of course, had a couple of red flags. He got in trouble as a kid, like in middle school, you know, kind of grew up in a hard neighborhood in South Florida. And he had to sort of answer for that. But I think there's actually an article that came out some time ago, I'll never be able to find it, about how he's been just such a model citizen and great in the community and a leader in the locker room and just like the absolute character that you would always want, which is just so far removed from his draft narrative. And that's because when people said, oh, that's not who he is anymore, Nobody really believed him, except for the Vikings, who are pretty good, I think, at navigating these types of situations. So that brings me to somebody who got in a little bit of trouble. And I don't mean that sarcastically. I mean, it was genuinely a pretty small thing, but I think it hurt him more than it should have. That's David Moa, the defensive tackle out of Boise State. They call him the Moa Constrictor because he's this big, unmovable dude that can just kind of squeeze you and take you out. As always, links for all this stuff in the show notes. But David Moa grew up in a Polynesian household with a brother he would like roughhouse with all the time. And, you know, you talk to his like teachers and his parents and stuff and people who like watched him grow up and his like roughhousing with his in horseplay with his brother. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, he's going to be a football player. Like they just always saw that sort of fight in him, that drive. And so it shouldn't surprise you that when he comes to Boise State, he pretty quickly rises to being a very good defensive tackle. He's a big guy, big nose tackle type. And you get a lot of think pieces around this. This is like his sophomore year, kind of headed into his junior year at Boise State. And you get a lot of think pieces and kind of profiles about how he's the leader of the defense and how he's the kind of the veteran. And it's kind of funny because he's not like a senior. Like he's still a young kid. He has 2 years and a redshirt year into his career. And you get these stories of, you know, oh, we were out and I was really heated about something and I was going to get in a fight and he talked me down and he would talk me down. And there were actually a couple of different instances of a teammate almost getting into some kind of altercation in some kind of bad situation and David Moa being the one to be like, it's not worth it, bro, and actually talk him down, which is why it's super, super surprising when on, I think it was September 17th, 2018, I think, he gets arrested in a drunken altercation downtown. And, you know, he says all the right things afterwards. He says, oh, it was totally a mistake. That's not who I am. You know, I regret it and I'm going to do everything right and try to come back. And he even admits and he says, you know, I really think that affected our next game. The Boise State went on to lose to Virginia 42-23, 6 days after that incident. And I think, you know, we've kind of seen that as Vikings fans, right? You see something happen with Everson Griffin and it ruins the mood of the team. And suddenly they get blown out by Buffalo Bills team that I think only won like four other games that year. He only actually serves a one quarter suspension. He sits out the first quarter of that game and it turns out to be this huge blowout loss. But I think the actual effect that it has on his career is super, super exacerbated because he, of course, is coming out the year that COVID-19 happens and he's got a thing that people are going to want to look into. And it, of course, becomes a lot harder to do that, to look into red flags and stuff and do like your research. You know, the Vikings kind of took the approach of calling coaches. And I think that when they would call Boise State coach like Brian Harsin, he would say, oh, no, he's totally, that was out of character for him. You don't have to worry about it at all. That was a one-off thing. He's the greatest kid ever, blah, blah, blah. And that's, I think, a lot of what led to the kind of theme of their draft. And honestly, I think with these kinds of red flag things, you can look at the way that somebody responds and you can see a difference between somebody just kind of saying a PR thing once and then trying to move past it and getting in trouble again, you know, 2 months later, versus a guy that really takes it to heart and is open about it and talks to the media all the time and you know, has quotes that come, you know, 2 months later going, wow, you know, reflecting, I can't believe what I was thinking and I just want to be better and I want to take the night, but, you know, and all that stuff where you can kind of express regret in a way that I think you can tell what's genuine and what isn't. And that's just me Googling at whatever I can figure out on the internet, right? That's not me having the access to call someone like Brian Harsin and talk about it like the Vikings do. So I think the Vikings, again, they've been very good at navigating that kind of thing. But I don't think all the teams are. And I think they were especially ill-equipped to do that with COVID-19 without being able to meet these people and look them in the eye and square them up and see how they act around you. NFL teams really want to do that. And I think, I mean, David Moa and his camp certainly think that they could have been drafted. He, of course, also didn't get a chance at his pro day. So he had to resort to, you know, sending virtual workouts and stuff. And that can definitely change the draft order. Even though everybody's dealing with that, the people who would have like exploded and kind of gotten on the radar at a pro day don't get that advantage anymore. I think David Moa could have been that. But all this stuff leads to him going undrafted, and maybe he wouldn't have were it a normal pre-draft process. But he now joins a defensive tackle group that is honestly not a great stroke of luck for him, right? He joins a group with Michael Pierce and Armin Watts and Jaleel Johnson, all, you know, filling out that roster at nose tackle. And so unless, you know, you're going to have him play three tech, I doubt they will, you know, you're going to have a really difficult time for David Moe to actually crack the roster, though he might be one of those practice squad guys where, hey, you know, we think his if you think his athleticism is good, the Vikings have like ghost estimations for all that stuff and think that there's a little potential. You can maybe see if he has a good camp in preseason, he could maybe sneak onto the practice squad. And I think that's what the goal has to be for David Moe. So with that, I'm going to now turn it over to the interview with Matthew Coller. That's going to come up in just a second. So please, please stick around. Okay, I am here with none other than Matthew Coller of now Purple Insider. How you doing, man?
I am doing okay. You know, I got hit by the coronavirus with the economy and lost my job and everything, but trying to do my best to bounce back. And I know that I am not alone out there. So if other people have lost their jobs too, then, you know, I feel for you and I know what it's like now, but you know, just trying to carry on and go forward covering the Vikings.
Yeah. So tell me about your new endeavor here, Purple Insider. It's, I understand it's articles, podcasts. Tell me about it. Give me your pitch. Give me your plug.
Okay. Yeah. So after I lost my job working at Score North, along with basically the rest of Score North, unfortunately, it was quite a kick in the gut because I really felt good about where we were going as a station, but I decided pretty quickly, like, you know, I got to figure out something else to do here to stay covering the Vikings. I mean, it's been such a great experience. I moved from Buffalo to Minnesota to cover the Vikings, and I've been doing that for the last four seasons. And, you know, as you know, it's always a roller coaster, and it never stops being entertaining and interesting. So I wanted to continue to do that if I could. So I launched Purple Insider, and the Vikings are continuing to credential me, which is really great. So if and when the facility opens back up and I can go out there for press conferences, I'll still be doing the same things that I was for Score North. And it's a lot of the analysis angles. If you're looking for the Friday report on the injuries, that's probably not the place for you. But if you're looking for Delvin Cook contract analysis or Kirk Cousins versus the rest of the quarterback schedule, that's the type of stuff that I'm doing. And podcast is on the way. There will be Purple Insider podcast. I'm days away here as we record this from getting it up. I actually think it is up now on like all the platforms, but just haven't uploaded the episodes and getting all those things finalized. But that is coming soon. So that'll be very much like my old show. So if you listen to Purple Daily, you're going to like a lot of the same things and hear a lot of the same people on the Purple Insider podcast. So if you want to follow it, go to purpleinsider.com is where you can subscribe, or you can go to the Twitter account, which is purple_insider, tweet out all the articles and you can find it there.
Oh, I got to go follow the Twitter account. I don't even do that. So I was going to ask for all of the links and stuff, but you just gave me that. So I guess we can go into some of the takes, because it sounds like it's a brand of like opinions and analysis and arguments and stuff. So I guess because it's kind of the debate of the hour, because it seems like there's an imminent Dalvin Cook extension coming, and we all don't know how much it's going to be, but I guess I don't actually know what your take is on it, so I don't know if I agree or disagree with you. So I just want to know what is your take on a Dalvin Cook extension, both with like should they, shouldn't they, how much?
Well, I think that the fear over a Dalvin Cook extension is understandable, but not necessarily as rational as it might seem. So like anytime you're on the internet, someone will be fighting about the value of running backs. Like there'll be a former player tweeting about it and someone from Pro Football Focus, and they're yelling at each other and things like that. But if we take a step back and we look at just this situation, Minnesota Vikings, Dalvin Cook, this player, this team, this cap situation, if you take a look at where they are with the cap at this very moment, it's not in a great spot. 1 year from now, assuming that the NFL has its revenue and so forth, and the salary cap's not going to take a huge dip, they'll be in a really good spot because they have corners on rookie contracts. They will probably have a left tackle on a rookie contract. And all of a sudden, they will go from one of the most cap-strapped teams to a team that has space to work with. So if you sign Cook to a contract extension and say you move on from Riley Reiff, you restructure Anthony Barr, you restructure Kyle Rudolph or move on from him depending on how he plays this year, then all of a sudden, if he's paid $12 million on the salary cap in 2021, it's not that big of a hit for them. And his contract will probably time out with it'll run out and he'll be out of his prime by the time you have to pay all these other players that you've just drafted in the high rounds here. And the Vikings have always done a terrific job of knowing when they can get out of deals, when they can sign other players to deals, and how long. And they've always managed the cap extremely well because of that. So I think that, you know, yes, you might be overpaying for a running back, but it's also not just your regular run-of-the-mill running back that we're talking about. We're talking about someone that, when he's been healthy, has been one of the five best players at his position in the NFL. And there's also this idea that you can just drive around and whatever guy you see in your neighborhood, you could pick him up and put him in the backfield and he'll run for 1,000 yards and catch 60 passes. Well, it's really not the case. I mean, if you use Pro Football Reference and you search through all the undrafted running backs who have become stars versus all the first and second rounders, it's a pretty vast difference outside of someone like Arian Foster. So, you know, I think that what you're paying for is someone who's still pretty young, going to be 25 years old, who will be making a lot, but is a huge, huge part of your offense, and you can afford it. If they were going to really get themselves in cap trouble, I would be much more concerned about this, but I think it's going to be fine despite the trepidation that a lot of people have over it.
Okay, that makes sense. So I guess to distill it down, to make sure I have it right here, it's that paying Dalvin Cook like $12 million or whatever would be an inefficiency, but it would be an inefficiency that the Vikings are pretty well equipped to handle, both because of their reputation in terms of matters of the cap and also just more specificities about their situation.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Is like, if we're talking on a broad spectrum, it's kind of like all analytics things apply across broad spectrums. Like, you know, baseball, don't bunt, right? You don't want to bunt in baseball. It's an inefficient play. Okay, well, you're in the World Series, ninth inning, tie ball game, guys on second with nobody out. You might want to bunt him over to third base with your eight hitter up at the plate or something like that. You know, there's always exceptions, and there's always times where you could say, you know, something that might be inefficient in the broader spectrum, in this particular situation, it also might make sense.
Sure,
it might,
running in the fourth quarter, yeah.
Right, exactly. And you don't just have somebody who is pretty good in the backfield that you're going to overpay. You have someone who is, again, still pretty young at 25. You look at the age curve, these guys peak usually from, what, 24 to 28, so you're right in the peak of his career. He has way less mileage on him than someone like Todd Gurley by about, like, maybe he has 40% of the carries that Todd Gurley did when he signed his contract extension. So, you know, I guess I think of it, yeah, signing a running back in a system that in the past has made certain running backs look really, really good. What was the guy's name? Tatum Bell. There was Mike Anderson. Like, we know that there are other running backs who could be good. But I don't know if they could be this good. You look at the yards after contact, yards after catch. You know, he made a pretty mediocre offensive line look better than it was last year and helped Kirk Cousins a heck of a lot on short checkdowns and screen passes and things like that. You know, I think that there's more value to him than just your average runner, to have someone who can play every play in a game if you need him to.
Yeah, so there's only a couple things there that I would push back on, because I don't think there's a lot of distance between the two of us on this at all. I think that there is definitely an amount you can justify for Dalvin Cook. That amount is probably higher for other running backs. I think the idea of comparing him to, like, you know, Mike Anderson or Tatum Bell or whatever, the comparison is, do you have Dalvin Cook or do you have Alexander Mattison? And I think Alexander Mattison is probably significantly better than those random Ben Tates. And so I think that that is the difference we should be talking about. And then I think the idea of him not having a lot of wear and tear doesn't ring that solid to me, because the reason he doesn't have a lot of wear and tear is because of medical issues and, you know, his health. And so, like, touting that as a positive, I think, is something that I don't necessarily agree with. That said, I mean, you said 12, my number's been 9 or 10, so there's not really a huge gulf between us or anything. And if they signed him for 12, I could probably talk myself into that.
Well, the part about the injuries is we would have to ask, which ones can we project forward? Okay,
so I would say the ACL, right?
Well, he tore the ACL, but he's also not the only guy to tear an ACL, right? I mean, lots of players do and come back, and it doesn't really impact them long term. And the hamstring the year after was probably connected to the ACL. And then you have a shoulder that's kind of random. A fat guy falls on him.
The shoulder, I don't care about much.
It's one of those things where, you know, I don't know. There's been numerous players where we tag early on as being injury prone, and they are until they're not anymore. I mean, it's just like
Rudolph.
That's exactly where I was going with this. Is there's one of the most durable players in the NFL over the last, 5 years. And before that, he had been dinged up. Harrison Smith had been dinged up early in his career and then hasn't been since, almost at all. It's really hard to predict. And I think with the modern medicine that we have, the ACL, as young as he had that injury, don't think that that's going to hold him back. And it definitely didn't with the way he looked last year. It is a huge risk. I'm not saying, like, there's no risk involved. This is totally fine. Everything's good. I mean, there is a risk involved in any running back that you sign, because all of a sudden, if you hand the ball to him, you know, a lot more and he gets a lot more usage next year, then all of a sudden you got a 2-year sample of him getting the ball all the time. And then you start to get concerned down the road. It's just that the way they have this worked out, even if this contract is not great, even if he doesn't average 5 yards a carry and is not one of the more efficient yards after catch guys in the NFL, it hasn't totally burned you. And you do have other options in the backfield. I like the combination of those two guys, because Madison coming off the bench in the third quarter after, you know, Dalvin Cook has carried them early for a drive or two was really effective for them last season. And there's data to back up that players are faster early in the game than they are later in the game, obviously, right? And so if you have a guy coming off the bench who's fast and powerful and he's running over linebackers like we saw against Dallas, having that 1-2 punch is really effective. So I think you're a better football team by a pretty decent margin if you have Dalvin Cook. And even if you feel like you're overpaying, it doesn't destroy your salary cap or anything like that. If they were going into next year and their salary cap was super tight and you're saying, well, okay, you have to decide between Cook and this guy, you know, maybe you wouldn't go Dalvin Cook because of all the risks involved. But there aren't many of those decisions to be made next year.
Yeah, next year is going to be a little bit lighter, and then 2022, the hammer is going to come down with 45 million of Kirk Cousins, which I would love to get Kirk Cousins' takes, but we're pretty much out of time here. So thank you so much for coming and hanging out on this show. Hit me again with, and I'll make sure all the right links are in the show notes here, but hit me again with all the places that I can find your wonderful work.
Yes. If you are on Twitter, you can go find it at purple_insider. If you go to your podcast app and just type in Purple Insider, it'll come up. And once episodes start getting loaded in, you'll be the first to have them. And purpleinsider.com is where you can subscribe.
And you can get the mailing list for free, right? If you just want to sample it.
Yep. And you'll have one article a week I send out to everybody. It's usually the Monday morning article goes out to everyone. So there's a lot of people who have signed up at the free level, and I appreciate that very, very much. So if you sign up, you'll at least get, you know, that one article, and then you can listen to the podcast as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much again for coming on, Matthew. I'll have to have you again sometime.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Luke.
And thank you guys for hanging out and listening to this episode and this week of Locked On Vikings. That's going to do it for me this week. I will see you guys again on Monday. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. The show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcast, or you can simply ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I will see you all next week. And as always, Skol.